Let's go, girls.
Welcome to the AmeriChicks with Kim Monson and Molly Vogt. Molly is a former mutual fund consultant and retirement plan specialist who is currently the director and founder of My Purse Politics. Kim served as a city councilwoman, is a former investment broker, and now a successful entrepreneur. Now, let's hear what's hatching in local and national politics with the AmeriChicks. Molly and Kim.
Hey, welcome to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We hope you are having a fabulous Friday. It's Friday, Molly.
TGIF. I've been waiting all week.
Yes,
thank you.
Yes. You have big plans for the weekend?
Not that I'm sharing live on radio, but I'll just say, yeah.
Okay, well, good.
Actually, I'll share something. I am going to an 80s party.
Okay.
Because that's my genre.
Okay.
So do you think I could wear roller skates and get away with it?
I think you probably could, Molly. Can you roller skate? That's the
I can roller skate. That's what I'm saying. I grew up in the 80s.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, have a good time. I hope you don't fall and scrape your knee.
Now that you say that, thanks. So this is KDMT, Denver's Money Talk Radio, and we're on every Monday to Friday, 5 to 6 p.m. drive time. So we get you right when you're in your car and you are looking for something cool to talk about. And of course, every Friday is our World War II Day, which is our favorite day because we want to share stories of our favorite heroes. Our heroes didn't wear capes. They wore camo.
Mm-hmm.
They still do.
Yeah. Yeah, well, we have a very special guest in studio with us. Bill Imanese is going to share his grandfather's story. His grandfather was in military intelligence and counterintelligence in World War II, and Bill spent a couple of weeks with his grandparents every summer and learned these stories. And as he started to talk about this, we're like, we need to get you on for the World War II project.
So, absolutely.
So really excited to have him in studio with us. He is an entrepreneur. He has a couple of businesses, Trinity. They're starting a new one, Evan, which we are really excited about. It's a new model to help you with your computer challenges.
Well, which basically means that he created it specifically for you, Kim Monson, because I don't know anyone who has more computer issues than you do, my friend. And I got to tell you, I don't think your neighbor is going to, you know, he's happy that you invite him over every single day to fix your computer. You got to be passing over some bundt cakes for that or something.
I think that may be why they don't answer my calls anymore.
Yeah. Well, the good news is now there's going to be an application that you can get somebody on the phone immediately to chat with.
It's going to be
it's
really great.
It's called Evan, coming out soon.
So we're excited about that.
Yep.
Should be great. So couple of things. You know, we look at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And we bring forth issues that should be on your radar. We know that you're busy. And while you're sitting in the car, we hope that you're learning something. Our goal is to educate, inspire, and then encourage you to engage. And we're starting to see some real action on that, Molly. So
yep.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. But with that, what's on my radar? You know, transportation is on my radar on a regular basis.
And probably on the people who's in their car listening right now.
Right. And Molly, if you hear something enough times, does that make it true? If you say it enough times, is it true?
Only to yourself.
Okay.
You might be fooling yourself.
Well,
but you can only fool yourself for so long.
Well,
eventually that mirror talks back.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about this whole ride sharing thing, that in fact that it might be the emperor has no clothes.
Oh, that's gross.
Case in point, you know, we hear all this about ride sharing, and I love free markets. I love the fact that people can choose, you know, how they want to travel. However, when you start to have government subsidies that are picking winners and losers on different travel options, they're not necessarily options because it's no longer a level playing field. And you see government politicians and bureaucrats start to move kind of in a way social engineer travel. And one of the amazing things about America, the individualism of travel, is that you have the freedom to go where you want to, when you want to. When you start to get into these ride sharing things, it sounds good, but you know, I had an experience earlier this week. The electricity was out. I couldn't get my garage door open. I did call the garage door people, and apparently that little thing wasn't releasing. So they showed me how to do that and release that in the future, but that was the problem. And so I tried to get Uber, and their app was down. Lyft, I couldn't get signed up to. I couldn't get a taxi. I couldn't find any of my neighbors to take me.
Because you've asked them all for too much computer help. Thank you, Evans, coming to help you. Keep going.
This is true. And finally, at the very last moment, the electricity came on. I was able to get out of the garage and get in front of this microphone by 5 o'clock. But I was a little stressed out. My point is you can't depend on somebody else. And so we've been talking about car sharing. And I, when I was on city council, we saw all these big, you know, get-togethers touting car sharing, you know, bike paths, all this. I just saw today in the Denver Business Journal that Enterprise had a car sharing program in Denver, and they are going to disband that. They said that what has happened is that it did not meet company expectations in those markets. That is code for people didn't want to use that. And I think that it is important that we make sure that we keep free market in this whole car sharing thing instead of these subsidies that are going into like Car2Go and different companies like that. Because when people vote with their dollars, and you see people sitting out there in traffic, they're voting. They're saying, I want to be in my car that I know is clean or has my stuff in it. I can load my car the night before. I have all kinds of freedom. And so I think that there may be, like I say, a bit of a emperor has no clothes on this whole car share thing.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And also, you know, we already have so much traffic all the time in Colorado. Imagine if you're sitting next to all these different cars that had absolutely nobody in there. That wouldn't be making me very happy. It's kind of like the light rail right now. You look at there and there's hardly anybody in there, maybe one or two people. And I know that I'm paying for that. And that's what's sad is if the free market wants it, if we want it, we're going to pay for it and we'll use it. But if we don't want it, we're not going to use it. And we're paying for it anyway. And that's terrible because it's taking away from projects that we really do want. So let's just be wise fiduciaries of our money here. Why doesn't the government be wise with their money? We have to.
Well, that's a good point. And we've talked about it many times. Typically, and I think there was even legislation that they can take any up to about 20 to 25% of the gas tax money. And instead of putting it into roads and bridges, they've been putting it into all of these other things. And then, of course, politicians and bureaucrats realize that roads and bridges are important to us. So then they come in and they want to try to get a tax increase to do that. So we just want to keep your eyes on the process on this whole thing and bring forth the truth on it.
That's kind of like the government causing a crisis so that they could fix the crisis. Yeah, they're doing it on Broadway. I don't know if you've seen, but there's so many bike paths and bike parking. You can't even park your car anymore, and they've got rid of an entire lane to drive on. Not a good solution, government. Let the free market do it. It's the Americhicks. We'll be right back.
If you're a veteran looking to purchase a home, choose the local experts at Home Mortgage Alliance. VA loans offer qualifying veterans the option to buy without a down payment, and closing fees are limited. Active duty or retired military, reserves, and surviving spouses may qualify. Kim Sturtz and Mark Cook have spent decades finding the correct loan to suit your unique financial situation. Give Home Mortgage Alliance a call at 303-888-2732. That's 303-888-2732. Or check them out on our Americhicks referral list at Americhicks.com.
Home Mortgage Alliance LLC is an approved FHA lender. Sponsored agent of VA loans. NMLS number 1137507.
When buying or selling your home, you need a top-notch negotiator with experience. Award-winning RE/MAX Alliance Realtor Karen Levine has helped individuals navigate the ups and downs of the Denver real estate market for over 25 years. Karen Levine is honest, trustworthy, and has your best interests in mind. Let Karen help you find the right home for your lifestyle. Call Karen at 303-877-7516 for a no-cost consultation. That's 303-877-7516 or visit her online at Karen-Levine.com and tell her the Americhicks sent you.
Today you need to have a great online and social media presence, and the best in the biz is Desi On Demand. The Americhicks, Molly and Kim, personally work with Brandon, the founder of Desi On Demand. Desi On Demand is instrumental with our video projects, Chick Chat, Exceptional Endeavors, and our World War II project. We most heartily endorse his creativity, innovation, dedication, and integrity. Brandon and his team bring all that to the table. Check out Desi On Demand's website at mydesi.com or call 303-359-1522 for more info, and be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, oh my! No need to worry about your company or personal finances with the proven professionals at Predovich & Company. Predovich & Company are certified public accountants who offer exceptional services to individuals, businesses, and nonprofits. Serving the South Metro area, the team at Predovich & Company strives to take a proactive approach in understanding your tax, accounting, and bookkeeping needs and situation. Give Predovich & Company a call at 303-791-3000 or check out their website at dpredovich.com and be sure to tell them the Americhicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, and happy Friday, everybody. Hopefully, you're going to have a fabulous long weekend. And thanks for tuning in to KDMT 1690 AM every Monday to Friday while you're sitting in traffic. We love to share some stories with you. You know, we look at issues as right versus wrong instead of right versus left. And then Friday's always our World War II story. And so before we get to our World War II story of the day, I just wanted to say I really liked President Trump's speech that he gave in Warsaw yesterday. And there's a lot of people that are complaining about it because he was promoting Western values, which I think was very solid. Mm-hmm. And he was really giving kudos to our allies in the West, which is great. It's nice to have allies again. It's nice to have friends around the world that think that
they trust us again,
mm-hmm. that we can actually be friends with again. And he praised the Polish resistance during World War II. And that really means a lot to me when it comes to our World War II talks, Kim.
Right.
Because, you know, as we've talked about before, just real quick, won't go into the whole story, but when we were in Normandy last year for D-Day with our four World War II vets, we had a Polish family, which is one of many families, that invite us into their home because they wanted to make dinner for the veterans because they are so thankful of the risk and the sacrifice that the American military made for them to free them at that time.
Well, and just a point of clarification, they were a Polish family who I think they lived in Belgium now. It was the children that lived in Belgium, and then they had a summer home right on Utah Beach. And so that's kind of the way that whole thing was set up.
Right, right. Well, and so, you know, the interesting thing is that the Polish family, they were Jewish, and mm-hmm. they, during the Nazi, when the Nazis were coming door to door, the grandmother was telling us the story, and she was 2 years old, and they split her mom and her dad up to hide from the Nazis, so they went to different Catholic families. Unfortunately, her mom and her dad were both caught and sent to concentration camps. Mm-hmm. She fortunately made it herself. Her dad did not make it. Her mom made it until the very end of the war, barely, in the concentration camp. And by the time they were liberated, it was time to let them go. But the Nazis didn't want everybody to know what they had done. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to leave any proof behind.
Right.
So her mom was put on a train with many other people, like a cattle train with the doors closed, no water, no food, no light. And the goal was they were going to ship them off over the ledge into the water and nobody would ever see them again.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point the train stops. The conductors are arguing back and forth, which way are they going at the split? And the American soldiers came up and opened the door.
The good
and
guys.
Freed them. The good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's saying, you know, thank you so much to our military. Thank you for what you've done. And we think that's why we share these stories is we want people to understand if you know how great Americans' military is and how great America is because we risk for all. It's not just about Americans. It's about freedom for everybody. We fight against tyranny everywhere. And so I liked this presentation that Trump just did, President Trump. And I just want to share this. At the end of his presentation, our defense is not just a commitment of money. It's a commitment of will. The fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. I think it's so true. I think we do have the will to survive. But I think in order to do it, we need to make sure that we're sharing the truth and that we are uniting the people together in America and our allies around the world. And we're standing up against tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to do that. Another good thing that happened today is President Trump sat down with President Putin.
Mm-hmm.
They were supposed to have a 30-minute conversation. It went over 90 minutes. I, you know, we'll see what comes of that, but I think that's a good thing. You know, we've got a businessman in here who knows how to make a deal. And so I'm looking for something good. The good thing apparently that did come out of that is that the United States and Russia so far have reached a deal on a ceasefire in Syria. So we'll see what happens, but it would be nice to start to have people to work with again, but hold them accountable if they're mm-hmm. not going to.
Definitely. So, yeah, it sounds like it's interesting over there in Hamburg as well. These protesters, chaos, we're seeing it here in America, over there, people going in and protesting and just trying to create chaos. And we need to realize that we need to stand up against that kind of tyranny because do you really want those kinds of people in charge of our lives? I don't think so.
No. And what a lot of people, I don't think, understand, like, you know, the progressives of our day is they want to crash the system so that they can rebuild it. That's always been Cloward and Piven's you know, that's been there, what they've been pushing for. That's what Marx was pushing for. That's what, you know, of course, Hillary Clinton and President Obama, who all studied under Saul Alinsky, were for, is crash the system, get so many people on it, on the government dole, that everything crashes and we can start over. But they never shared the plan for starting over. What's going to be your solution? What are you going to do better for the people? Their idea has always been communism. And we've seen it's absolutely never worked for the people. Capitalism is the only thing that's brought more people out of poverty. It's the only way to go, is to unleash innovation. Let us do what we were created to do. Let us go out there and build something. Build something that somebody else will find a value that they give their money mm-hmm. to.
And that is what is so unique about the American idea. What is also unique about the American idea is that we have sent young men and women throughout the world over generations to stand against tyranny. And one of the things that we do on Fridays is to talk about our World War II project. And in studio with us is Bill Imeny. And he is a new friend of ours. Bill, welcome.
Thank you. And I appreciate what you guys are doing with the World War II project. That's super. And because as a young person growing up with a grandfather who fought in World War II, I get to hear firsthand stories. And this next generation is not able to hear those. And by what you're doing is making that happen.
Well, we didn't realize how important this was until we came back from Normandy. I'd always heard of these stories. I kind of understood the sacrifice. I knew about D-Day. I had a great uncle that served in the Aleutian Islands, which is, you know, off the coast of Alaska. It's American territory. And I didn't realize that the Japanese were actually starting to occupy the Aleutian Islands, which was U.S. territory. So the Pacific was really, really important. We had these two battle fronts going on. And Bill, I just have kind of this picture in my head of you talking with your grandfather, like sitting right next to him or on his knee, and just hearing these stories. So Bill Imeny is with us. His grandfather was with the Nisei. He was a counterintelligence guy. He was kind of like a spy, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, and really what they were called spy catchers. So the, and just to frame this up, Japan had their Kempei Tai, which was the equivalent of our counterintelligence, and they had, and that all started in 1890s. So
Wow. There
were up to 75,000 of them. So when the Pearl Harbor bombing happened, we had about 1,000 people. What was called the CIP, which then after that they formed what's called the CIC. So
and CIC stands for
Counterintelligence Corps.
Okay.
So essentially they were the spy catchers, and that was their job. So my grandfather was one of the first class of CIC agents to be recruited into that, and so it was a combination CIC OCS school that he went through, and it was made up of a lot of lawyers, a lot of investigators, people with advanced degrees. My grandfather got in; he didn't have a college degree,
okay.
So he was able to get in through in some intelligence tests and the like, and he ended up finishing in the top 10 in his class. So but just framing it up, they started out in their training in the U.S., but then were quickly in 1944 sent off to the South Pacific.
Okay, and so he was with an interrogation team. So he's in the South Pacific, and you said they're spy catchers. So he's going out with his team, you know, trying to catch these guys?
Well, what they did, there was about, during World War II, there was about 4,000 of these, by the end of World War II, there was about 4,000 of these counterintelligence agents. And he was given, and they were all sent off in different detachments, and they were assigned to different infantry. So my grandfather was assigned to the 81st Infantry, which was the Wildcat Division. And essentially, General Paul Mueller was the general in charge of 25,000 some odd troops. And General Paul Mueller calls him in and says, look, I don't know much about the CIC. Tell me what you guys do. He explained it to him, and he said, oh, you know what? I've got this unit of Nisei over here, which is essentially second-generation Japanese-Americans. So Isai are the first generation. Nisei are the second generation. A lot of them are born in the United States, but he had about a dozen of them. He said, look, I don't know these guys. They don't have a CO. You're a lieutenant. You're a new young lieutenant. Not only are you in charge of the CIC detachment, I'm putting you in charge of these 12 Nisei. But what they did was actually very genius, because part of their job was to spy on the spies and catch the bad guys, which at that time were the Japanese. Well, what better people to have in your team are other Japanese who can speak their language and interrogate them and get information out of them because they know their culture and they look like them and they sound like them.
Right.
But there was probably a bit of a trust factor, wasn't there, with our guys and the Japanese and the second generation? I mean, how'd they get past that?
Well, I think there's a lot of people who are suspicious. And I think just from knowing my grandfather and the way he was wired, he was one of those people who would give somebody the benefit of the doubt. So he was not one to just automatically say, oh, you look like this or you're that. So he got to know these guys and got to know them well and learned to trust them. And these are people that grew up in America. They went to American schools. So what he did was he used their skills. They knew the Japanese language. And he would, example, after the Marines would go and accomplish their battle in Peleliu, they would come in afterwards and go into the villages and interrogate people and basically fish out the officers who are trying to act like civilians and trying to hide and that type of thing.
That is intriguing work, Molly. You know, I never had really thought about this component of this until we met Bill. And, you know, that seems like really scary because you kind of don't know who the enemy is exactly. And you're trying to figure it out and you're trying to stay hidden.
Well, it's really scary because you go into these, he and his team would go into these villages and they actually met this one young boy who was a young child. This is in the Philippines. He paid 350 pesos to go around throwing grenades into American occupied buildings. So you had, and there was prostitutes engaged by the Kemper Thai who would go out and try to get information from American
sure.
soldiers. So they were all over the place. So, the interrogations were key though because they had plans and they've been working on these plans forever. So what they would end up doing is they would capture a Japanese officer and they would sit him down. And the Japanese officer all heard that the Americans were going to do terrible things to them.
Because they did awful things to the Americans.
Of course.
I mean, the Bataan Death March, you know.
Right. And so what they would do is they'd sit down, they'd take care of their, you know, maybe they're injured, they'd stitch them up, they give them a cigarette, give them some water, and all of a sudden they realize these guys aren't, I've been lied to. And it didn't happen all the time, but in a lot of cases they would start talking. And so one of the interesting stories that happened in Peleliu was they captured this Japanese officer and he revealed this place where they had all these Japanese documents, and it was kind of in this swampy area, and there was this safe in there, and they opened up the safe and there was about 200,000 yen in that safe.
Oh my gosh.
So that was actually a blessing, and I'll talk about how that happened fell in later during the Japanese occupation.
Okay, so they interrogate this officer. He says that there's a bunch of documents, it's in a swamp. You pull out the safe. There's the documents, which are probably of great help, as well as a bunch of money.
Right.
And they're able to use that a little bit later. Wow. This is going to be fascinating, Molly.
That's going to be great. I want to hear more about that. But, you know, I would think if they tell me, oh, yeah, it's just the safe that's out there, I'd be like, I'm not trusting you. Why would I believe that? You know, I mean, you're scared to death until you actually find what's there. You think you're on like a, you know, you're just on a like a little hunt and somebody's going to come get you. A spy catcher. That's cool. I think I'm going to go next Halloween as a spy catcher.
This is the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. We'll be right back.
Have a great night out and watch the best movies under the stars at the historic 88 Drive-In Theater. Beginning Friday, June 30th, the triple feature at 88 Drive-In will include Despicable Me 3, The Mummy, and Wonder Woman. Admission is $8 per person and children under 12 are free. Stay for one or all three. And be sure to visit their delicious snack bar to help 88 Drive-In Theater continue to bring you the best in movie entertainment. Get their special pizza deal Monday through Thursday. Receive one 12-inch pizza and two 16-ounce sodas, all for only $11. Stay up to date on movie showings and times at 88drivein.net and be sure to tell them the AmeriChicks sent you.
Hey, welcome back to the AmeriChicks, Molly and Kim. It's World War II Friday on KDMT, our favorite day. So we're talking about some spy stuff before we went to break right here. We have Bill Imony in studio with us, and his grandfather worked with the Nisei, combat intelligence officers during World War II. In Japan. And before we went to break, Bill, you were talking about, you know, how dangerous it is to be counterintelligent corps. And I can't even imagine being a spy catcher in Japan after what they did, because we've heard so many stories about the war in the Pacific.
Right-o.
And the Japan, I mean, they were so brutal. They were a lot more brutal, I think, than the Germans in a lot of ways. And the reason being because they were told that we were going to be so bad to them. They were lied to. And so the Americans are going to do really bad things to you. So, you know, kill them first or kill yourself first. So tell us a story about, you know, maybe something risky that happened to your granddad.
Well, I mean, they were there up front on the front lines. They had their foxhole. They lived and slept in it. But a lot of their work was to go out and ferret out whoever was left in the caves and hiding out there and the like, and then also figuring out who are the real Japanese soldiers that are dressed as civilians, who are the people that are really supportive, and the people they need to kind of capture and put in POW camps. Well, he had told me this story once about how he was walking along, and they're just kind of they're on a scouting mission going through a village, and all of a sudden the guy in front of him, he thought he tripped and fell, and he was actually shot from a guy in a coconut tree, and so, you know, they had to hurry and carry him back and to their home base. But I mean, that kind of stuff was scary because you had snipers, and right. You never knew, you didn't know who
the
was engaged
with you and who's against you,
and they would engage, and like I mentioned earlier, they'd engage kids, they'd engage even women who seemed like they were normal, and then they're doing some really evil, bad stuff. But their job was really to go in and kind of get their arms around what's left of an island after that. And that incident actually happened on Anguar in the South Pacific.
Well, now your grandfather was married. So he left back home your grandmother. Were there any children yet or?
Yeah. So while that was happening, my dad was born. So,
oh my gosh.
So all that stuff kind of happened around the same time, which, you know, that, and he's getting letters back and everything. So it's kind of interesting. So I actually, you talk about one of the yen, I actually have one of them at home that he wrote a little note saying, "Hey, Merry Christmas." And he writes a little note to his son. And it's kind of neat, you know, because when you think about it, and but at the same time, it's sad, but
right.
You know, it's hard because he had just gotten married right before he was deployed to Japan.
And just think about your grandmother. So here, you know, her husband has left. It sounds like she's expecting a baby. You know, the country is, you know, everybody knows somebody who's in the war. You don't know for sure if the guys are going to come back. I mean, it was a time, Bill. It was a time for America.
Well, I can't even imagine. I mean, I don't think anybody, you know, who in our generation can probably imagine or even be as appreciative of everything they went through
right.
at that time and what happened. And we've been through a lot in our day, but just hearing those stories. And again, what you guys are doing with this World War II project, super.
Do you ever look at something like a wall or you see something, a painting, you know, an old painting or something old, and you say, oh my gosh, if that could talk? I'm just thinking about that yen that your grandfather sent to your father as a little boy. Just think of what the experiences that little piece of paper had, you know?
Right, right. It said, he wrote in there, I think it smells bad. It doesn't smell bad anymore. We haven't kept it in the house. So
anyway. Okay. Kept it in the cigar area.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Bill, tell us about the yen. You were starting to tell that story before the break. But when they found the chest and it had 200,000 yen,
yeah.
Is that right?
Right, right. So after the Japan surrendered, they were the actual 81st Wildcat Division was one of the first to land on the on the island of mainland of Japan to go take over and occupy Japan, and so their job was essentially to go and bring order to it and make sure people are doing what they're supposed to do, collecting weapons, collecting documents, packaging them up, shipping them back to the United States, and all the, and making sure the yen actually helped them out, helped them make payroll for some of the soldiers.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's back up just a little bit. You had said during break that your grandfather had actually started training down in Colorado Springs.
Well, he started in Chicago. Well, so interesting. Yeah. So they actually, their training was in Chicago. So they were the first CIC class, and then they've gone to different locations. And the initial thought. So early, if you think back early on. The strategy in the war was early on, focus, let's get the Europe taken care of. Let's do this kind of a hold in the Pacific. And MacArthur was saying, "I need more people. I need help." And at that time, at that moment, they sent him up to Colorado Springs to go train in the mountains here, and then so that he can go off to the Alps and go and be
beyond
a
spot.
Yeah, right.
Theater.
Beyond that. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? He didn't go there, and the whole effort shifted, and there was this quote that said the drip turned into a river of troops coming into the South Pacific, and he was part of that, and so that so he trained for the winter mountains and all right. that stuff, and got sent to the, the other side.
But you know what I think the positive thing probably was too is that anybody who trains for something really really hard at our altitude ends up benefiting when they're doing something more at sea level. So that was a bonus, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. I can tell you, I can ride my bike uphill a lot further down low than way up there.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
We're talking with Bill Imeny, and he's sharing the story of his grandfather, William Imeny I, who was in the Counterintelligence Corps. He was in the first class that had graduated, and thought he was initially going to Europe, and he ended up over in the South Pacific with the Nisei, which were American-Japanese kind of spy catchers, if you will. So what was it like for them?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think we'll ever know what it was like for them. All you can do is hear the stories, and you know, because he talks about how he's in a foxhole, and you're sleeping in the foxhole, you're fighting in it, and you don't know what's coming next around the corner. So it's got to be scary. And I don't think it's anything we could ever imagine or understand. But all you can do is hear the stories and hope to pass it along to your. To the next generation, so they understand what happened. Because you think about what happened in the 1900s with Japan and them putting the whole Kempeitai Tai together. They're spies of 75,000.
I didn't realize
people.
They started this in the late 1800s.
It's been going on for a long time, and they had. And just to give you a quick anecdote about this in Hawaii, okay, there were about a hundred some odd. Businesses that were actually owned by foreign companies. Well, they went into all those businesses, and about half of them, about 53 of them, were actually owned by Axis countries backed by their country, and those people were actually spies.
Uh-huh.
So there was a lot going on from a spy perspective. So Japan spent a lot of time. So you can draw a lot of parallels when we start thinking about today with ISIS and what could happen and what they're doing. It's mind-blowing. But you just think about the amount of effort. 75,000 people... That's today, that's like 250,000 people, just from a population perspective.
You know, that raises an interesting point for today, because, you know, there's been all of this conversation. There's been the protests about the immigration pause, where President Trump, I think he says, you know, let's just make sure that we kind of know what's going on here, that we know the people that are here, why they're here, just understand that. And that seems to me like that makes common sense. And what you're describing here, Bill, is that what happened there in Hawaii, is they needed to figure out who was against us and who was for us.
Right, right. And all along they've been planning a lot of this, the attack and everything, and we didn't know it. And at the time we didn't have the counterintelligence staffed up to do that, and so they had to quickly do that in the war. And the interesting thing of it is some of the stories they tell about when they set up the counterintelligence and they set up the OCS school. They didn't follow all the exact rules you have to do for OCS school and everything. And one of my grandfather's friends had said you had to have a minimum number of teeth to be an officer, and that was just written in the book. But he barely had enough. This is my grandfather's friend, but
friend barely had enough teeth
to qualify as an officer. But and he wrote a whole book on it called Spy Catchers, about the whole journey of the CIC all the way from the beginning through when they disbanded them in the 60s. But the point is they had to put something together quickly and make it happen. And it's just kind of interesting because when they recruited the CIC agents, my grandfather, and they essentially said, "Look, you're not allowed to tell anybody what you're doing. You can't tell your family. You're going off fighting. You don't tell them what you're involved with. And by the way, you, while you're here in the States, you're not going to wear a uniform. You wear your badge below your lapel. So if you do need to show somebody something. So when they were training in the States, a lot of people looked at them going, what are you, draft dodgers walking around? Why aren't you in a uniform? They could never say, I'm with CIC or any, you know, tell them what they're doing. It was a super secret operation at the time.
Okay, let's go to break. When we come back, some more experiences.
In a world of uncertainty, anything can happen. It pays to protect yourself, your family, your business, your home, and your car. And it pays to work with the proven professionals at Alliance Insurance Services. Jeremy McCallum and his Alliance Insurance Services team work with a variety of insurance companies competing for your business. Jeremy and the Alliance Insurance Services team helps you find the right insurance at the right price. They know you'll sleep better at night knowing Alliance Insurance Services is handling all of your insurance needs. Give them a call today at 303-431-9351. That's 303-431-9351. And be sure to tell them the AmeriChick sent you.
Freedom begins in your house, not the White House. We Americans enjoy the privileges of a free society, and each of us has a duty and responsibility to keep America's unique ideals of freedom on course. How? Lens of Liberty can help. Lens of Liberty's Free Freedom Kit provides a complete guide to help you be informed, stay vigilant, and fight back for liberty. Order your Free Freedom Kit from lensofliberty.org now. That's lensofliberty.org, so you are armed with the tools necessary to stand for America's ideals.
Hey, welcome back. We hope you are having a fabulous Friday. And if you're sitting in your car, you are lucky because you are getting to listen to this wonderful, interesting World War II story with Bill Imeny III. His grandfather was in the Counterintelligence Corps in the South Pacific. And this is just fascinating, Molly. I am learning so much.
I am. Let's get to it because we've got a lot to say. All right, Bill, keep going. What else do we need to know that your grandfather told you?
Well, I think a lot of the interesting things that happened, and a lot of people have heard about it, but when it was time to take and occupy Japan, the CIC had a significant role there in terms of gathering as much intelligence as possible and trying to help put some organization around what was happening in that country. And part of it was making sure people were turning in their weapons and just the interesting stories about some of the artifacts and even some of these ancient Chinese artifacts, old weapons and everything that were confiscated, that were just, and how much history was there with those. And he, I remember as a kid, he had a lot of the Japanese swords and all these different interesting, and some of these Chinese things that were in the living room. And I'm going, why do you have that? That's not, but it's because a lot of those weapons were turned in and the like, and a lot of the soldiers were able to take those artifacts home.
Awesome.
The other interesting story was they actually were going and just canvassing the country and making sure everybody's complying. And they found 13 tons of gold that the Japanese Navy was hoarding for some of the companies in Japan.
So bonus.
Yeah. So, but they were hoarding it, and they were hoarding, yeah. And so, just understand this whole Kempei Tai that was their secret, you know, their version of counterintelligence. They were bad guys. I mean, they were not.
They didn't care about the people.
I don't think they cared about people or anything else. They did. There was a lot of illegal activities. A lot of there was tons of. It was just the list of atrocities and things they did were horrible.
Yeah. Well, during the occupation, did he talk much about that at all? I had a friend whose father, was a Marine, and he said that one of the things that was just shocking to him is when the Marines first went on to into Japan to occupy after the surrender, was that there were just rows and rows and rows of Japanese that were on their knees with their heads down, thinking that they were going to be killed. And I think to your point about, where they had captured some of these intelligence officers and they gave them some water and, you know, gave them a cigarette. And when these guys realized that they weren't going to be killed, you kind of look at them, you think, you know, what would you believe about us? I mean, we know that those are things that, I mean, we're the good guys.
Well, they grew up being told and brainwashed and from very young age that they were the good guys and we were the bad guys. So they were told that. And as we all know, there's a lot of psychological warfare that happened over there as well. And one example was with the way we use the Japanese knee side, they would go in with megaphones to, after we've captured an island, and try to get the soldiers to come out and surrender. And so that worked. He said, actually, you got shot at more than you, it worked, but it essentially, you had to use that psychological warfare in reverse. So when they heard a Japanese voice talking to them in their own language, they would listen. But they had, you're right though, they had no idea who we were. We were some
big bad boogeyman.
Right, right. Yeah. They had no idea.
But we were basically saying, okay, you know, we're busted, we're giving up, come out with your hands up. And some people did come out and some didn't.
Right, right. Sometimes they did, and trying to, and again, the scary part was you have these line of people there in a Japanese village, in a village or an island, not necessarily in Japan, but even before occupied Japan, you didn't know who was the Japanese soldier dressed up, and he's going to pull out a gun and shoot you, or whatever right. he might do, and so that was scary. But I think, you know, the whole point of it though is we had there were about 33,000 Japanese Americans served in World War II, and which is kind of
we don't hear that very often.
No, you don't, and quite a few, and most of them were in the 442nd unit, where they were kind of segregated off. But there were some that were integrated into some of the infantries, just like the Nisei that were integrated into that. But these guys were Americans. They were just like, and that was one of the things my grandfather told me. He said, hey, look, they're Americans too. It's not their fault. Their ancestors came from somewhere else. So I think that was important to understand. And I think it was hard for Americans and Japanese alike to be able to understand that there's some people that they can trust.
I think so. And we're talking with Bill Imeny III about his grandfather's experiences in World War II. Did he ever say anything? Now, you were a kid. I know that you were, and so this might be a question that a child might not ask, but did he ever say anything about the Japanese internment camps here, you know, in the United States?
He didn't, not too much. I think in general, a lot of the people from that day recognized that that wasn't the best option, or looking back, possibly, mm-hmm. but what else do you do at the time? And when something like this happens, you don't know what to do. So we didn't really go down that path, just because you don't see it when you're fighting over there.
Right.
You're over there in the foxhole fighting, and what's happening back here, and you think about today and the information that exchanges minute by minute. Well, back then it was handwritten notes going back mm-hmm. and forth, and mm-hmm. you hear things delayed. So he really didn't, and he didn't really talk about that yeah. too much.
Okay. But you think about, you know, he was a spy catcher at the time, and so he's going out looking for people that look just like him, that he doesn't know, you know, who's on which side or not. And that's kind of the problem that we had in America, too. We didn't know, and that's a problem we have now. I mean, right now we don't know. We have enemies that are coming after us here today.
Well, and the other piece of it, too, when the CIC was first formed, they were actually going in and spying on our own officers to make sure they weren't, you know, talking too loud, going to a bar and talking to somebody and, sure. and giving out information to a spy that happens to be someone who looks like a nice person they're talking to. So they did that for a little while, too. That got stopped because the priority was moved over to the Pacific. But you never know, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Would you say your grandfather was a really good judge of character?
Absolutely. I mean, he was a role model for me, so.
Yeah. What did he do when he came back?
So he was in the insurance business, and then he actually started his own insurance agency in Charlotte, North Carolina, and that's what inspired me to go start my own business. So because I mean just going seeing him every summer. I even went there for spring break to visit them when I was in college. So
and
just hearing about his business stories and what he did and how he had to deal with different challenges and whatever it might be, and hearing those, and I thought, I want to do that too.
Well, and I love that. I think that's a great segue into you as an entrepreneur. You have a successful business, Trinergy, and you're starting another business, Evan, which we're going to be excited to work together as growing our brand. But it's truly the entrepreneurial spirit. And if you want to give a little description on what Trinergy does, and then we want people to understand Evan, because I think it's brilliant what you're going to be doing.
Yeah, especially for Kim.
Yeah, so Trinergy, we are we call ourselves a non-traditional consulting firm. So we approach problems in a very non-traditional way. Typically, when companies hire a consultant, the consultant wants to spend a lot of time asking questions and the like. We get to the point, we get to the answer quickly and help actually implement instead of sitting around talking about things and drawing things on paper, but actually get to the point of getting results for our clients. So that's really where we're focused on getting results. So we do a lot of, we work with a lot of large and medium-sized companies.
Yeah, but Bill, how can you afford to do that? Because most of the time companies keep you on the phone or keep asking you question after question after question is because they're billing you by the hour, and that's helpful. How are you getting around that?
Well, we're, you know, so part of it is if you do the right things for your clients and you give them the quick answer, they're going to recommend you to somebody else. So most of our business is referrals. It's someone saying, hey, these guys helped us quickly. They didn't charge us a lot. And so you have a choice. I can sit there and try to get as much money out of one client, or I can provide a very quick answer to individual clients, and then they refer me, and that's only
how you build a business.
And honestly, that's a lot more fun. Yeah. Sitting around trying to mulling over one problem is not as much fun as going solving a problem and solving the next one, solving the next one. Yeah. So that's kind of how we're wired.
Can we send you to Washington? They could use you.
No, we've got enough work in Denver and Houston, and we're actually doing work in California. So
you're saying there's a chance. We're taking that as a maybe.
We'll see about that.
Okay, so if people want information regarding Trinergy, how can they get that information?
You just go to Trinergy.com. Hey. Their website. That's it. Simple.
Okay. That's easy. All right, how about Evan?
Evan, we call it Evan, your IT guy. We've done, and you guys are actually the first public announcement of this.
We are so excited.
So we're calling it Evan, your IT guy, and you actually go to evanyouritguy.com. It's the first on-demand crowdsourcing IT support platform for small businesses and individuals.
I love it.
We are essentially crowdsourcing IT professionals from all over the country. The crowdsourcing focus is actually we're focusing on veterans.
Love it.
There's a lot of veterans who know how to use technology and maybe they need some extra money working from home and the like. And then small businesses. So we're launching that actually in the end of August. And if you're interested and you're listening right now, you can go to evanyouritguy.com. And sign up and said, I heard you on the Americhicks, and we'll send you a free camera cover on your phone for your laptop.
Oh, I need one of those. This tape's getting kind of nasty.
Yeah, that looks really awkward. what people don't realize is on your laptop you have a camera there, and someone can hack in, and if it's not covered up, so we have these camera covers. So if you're listening, to say I heard you on Americhicks, and we'll mail you a free Evan, your IT guy camera.
Oh, I
cover.
Love that.
That's awesome. So, you know, when I say you've got to cover up your camera on your computer, I sound like I'm kind of crazy. But when the IT guy
tells you
knows
that.
What you can do, then you believe it.
Absolutely. So I'm going
to
sign up.
It's scary out there, guys. I mean, you talk about crime now. It's all shifted to the cyber crime and all the things that are going on out there. And you hear about all these viruses and everything. And that's part of what we're trying to be proactive about, too, is making sure people – have our small businesses have the right setup on their computer so when the latest virus comes out, they're not hacked. And so that's part of what we're trying to do as well.
I think it's such a creative business. And, you know, these young entrepreneurs that are, you know, have their savings into their businesses, and to be able to know that, you know, all of their IT questions can be answered in one place with Evan, your IT guy, I think it's really brilliant. We're really excited about this.
Yeah, we are too.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So that is evanyouritguy.com, and we will be getting you more information as you are getting closer and closer to your launch at the end of August.
Yes.
So, Bill Imony, it has been just a real treat to have you in studio. Any last thought that you'd like to leave with our listeners?
I know. I think what you guys are doing is incredible, really incredible. And hopefully it what you're doing goes viral, because this is important. Hearing and preserving the history and what's happening with what happened in World War II, and because some history is getting rewritten. Mm-hmm. Okay. Statues are getting taken down. Things are happening.
Right.
You guys are here to preserve that truth, and appreciate what you're doing.
Well, thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Bill. And our quote today is right here. Douglas MacArthur. I am concerned for the security of our great nation, not so much because of any threat from without, but because of the insidious forces working from within. General Douglas MacArthur.